Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. My, oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling. What a treat for everyone listening at home, but a tragedy for the for some out there, for my Bowen Yang diehards. Because this is not Bowen Yang. This is my other sister, who I knew to call on when Bowen was having technical difficulties. Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Joel Kim Booster. This is really, this is borderline problematic to be slotting in for Bowen Yang.
Shut up.
It is, you know, the symmetry. People are going to talk. People are going to make their jokes.
No.
And I don't think so, honey, people making jokes like that. We've
See,
been
and you
there.
Said you didn't know what your I don't think so, honey, was going to be. And look at you already popping off.
It can't be that. How boring.
No.
But listen. People literally at DC, a fan came up to me at a meet and greet and was like, Bowen Yang, I love your work.
Shut
and I was
up.
Like, we are not still doing that in the
no.
this the year of our Lord 2021. Stop Asian hate.
This
we won't
is
be
ridiculous.
Doing it.
No, this is fully ridiculous. Also, I will say this. I also hosted another podcast with you. The Legally Blonde recap podcast was truly a moment in podcasting history.
That feels like 10,000 years ago. I cannot believe we did that. And I cannot believe we need, you know what we need to bring back for this episode of Las Culturistas?
Oh my God, what, Cousin of the Week?
Cousin of the Week. We need to bring back Cousin of the Week. By the end of the episode, after I Don't Think So Honey, before I Don't Think So Honey, we will do Cousin of the Week.
Cousin of the Week was a segment on our Joel and I's Legally Blonde recap podcast. By the way, we should say it was Legally Blonde, the series, the musical, the series. We did a recap podcast for that.
The Search
just
for the
in
Next
time.
Elle Woods.
The Search for the Next Elle Woods, which I believe it came out 13 years ago.
Yeah, and so, I'm going to say like 2008. Yeah,
2008. That feels exactly right. Stylistically, thematically, aesthetically, that from what we watched, 2008 feels dead on. In fact, I think it is. And we did do a segment based on the contestants that week called Cousin of the Week, which was something I created because I felt that at any given time, any of those contestants were giving cousin energy.
Right.
And it
tracks absolutely. It makes complete sense when you watch the show. And it will make complete sense today when we name, out of all the topics that we talk about, we will be naming a Cousin of the Week. And you won't ask it. There are no follow-up questions to be asked.
No, we're not available to answer any questions after.
No.
We are actually abjectly unavailable. Isn't this funny? Because you actually texted me earlier. You said, what are you doing tonight? Sort of intimating that you wanted to hang out. Because you're, what are you, in Manhattan now?
I'm in Brooklyn right now, yeah.
Love the other Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Real Culture number 7. Brooklyn is
the
other Manhattan.
New York.
The LA of New York. The Silver Lake of New York. Truly Brooklyn. Think about it.
I like to think of LA as the 6th borough of New York.
100%. Wow, you're just saying fuck Long Island where I am right now.
Yeah.
You are saying that. I and this is actually, it's a beautiful stand-in. I want you to know I have had a full day. Earlier, I went into town to get Italian ices, which is something that people often do on Long Island. And I went into town on Main Street. Thank you.
Wow. The
in Lindenhurst, the Main Street. And I went to my favorite Italian ice place growing up. It's called Patsy's Italian Ices. And I never knew this, but on the wall, there is a plaque. And I texted you about this before in the group chat, but there's a plaque on the wall and it's a quote from Pat Benatar being asked about her hometown, and highlight it just says Patsy's serves the best Italian ices. And then it's a plaque on the wall. So this town, Lindenhurst, which is right by where I grew up and where my parents grew up, is so proud that Pat Benatar just tossed off this Italian ice comment that they plaqued it and put it on the wall, highlight. Okay? And it's across the church from Pat Benatar's church, Our Lady of Perpetual
Help.
It's
across the church.
It's across the street. It's across the church.
Now, I want to be fully upfront. I want to be real and raw with all of the readers tonight.
That's what we do.
I took a melatonin about 15 minutes before you called. And so, not only am I unprepared to talk about culture, not only have I not really ingested very much culture over the last couple of weeks.
You've ingested melatonin instead.
I've ingested a little melatonin, so I might be feeling a little sleepy. by the end of this podcast.
I often feel that people are at their most raw and vulnerable when they've just, when they've gotten a little sleepy. So I'm happy to get you in this state. But it's actually good that you, that we strike a little bit of a somber tone, because have you heard the bad news?
What is the bad news? Meghan McCain is leaving The View.
No, this is old. Well, we do have to talk about it.
Board member.
She has resigned from The View to sort of, I guess, commit herself fully 100% to being a board member of Las Culturistas. But that's not the bad news with which I speak. The bad news is T'Challa Samuels, Monique's bird, has passed.
No.
And she said on her Instagram that T'Challa passed in a freak accident.
She didn't go any further.
I think that probably it's too painful and potentially graphic and tragic. Because when I hear freak accident, I don't think, you know, that the bird went peacefully.
No, but like, you know, fuck birds. I've never met a bird that I cared if they lived or died. Truly,
not even that bird.
Not even that bird. Freak accident with birds, by the way, can mean anything. A freak accident for a bird could mean it flew out a window, which is not that freakish for a bird to do.
Well, you know that bird once ran away. That bird has a history of flying the coop, so to speak. And so, you know, that wasn't a pun until it was.
What's going on in that household? What's going on in that household? Who's having that conversation?
All I'm saying is, look, and if anyone has ever had a pet like run away, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying, like, what the hell's going on in that house and who's having that conversation? Because the bird tried to run away and successfully, or flew away, as it were, and then flew back. And now there's a freak accident. Again, not blaming her. And I know there's been a lot of drama in her life over the past year, but also shady of God to have this happen on the week of the Potomac premiere that she's not in.
Yeah, really shady of God to have it happen during America's birthday, too, of all things.
Like, to giveth and taketh away, to remind, to sort, it's just too much. I think to be Monique Samuels right now, to sort of see the Potomac trailer, to sort of see, like, Wendy really sort of take her place, as it were, as like she's like narrating the trailer. You know that Wendy's going to be bringing the drama this season in a way. And to know that like her bird died on the week of the premiere. Oh my God. She's lost so much.
Dr. Wendy, by the way.
Address her correctly. You are correct. But I it's almost proper for me that you come in here having ingested melatonin, because I never thought this would be like a Las Culch. I just sort of like flashed my hands like this say fanfare. This is a calm day of remembrance.
You guys are going to get about a third of the content at the exact same timestamp.
And you're going to pay the same $0, okay? So don't you fucking complain. Why did you tell me that you would not have been in the mood to do this 2 hours ago? Or is that an off-camera comment?
It's sort of an off-camera comment. It's not important. It's not important now. I've had a whirlwind day, full of text messages and FaceTimes and work-related stuff. And it is for you, Matt, as my friend to hear, which is why I wanted to go to dinner with you tonight as a friend. Not for you, Matt, as a podcaster to hear.
Now, how different do you
honestly,
think the two
honestly,
are?
Honestly, it could happen on an Instagram Live. Now, that's the the liminal space between podcasting and a private one-on-one dinner is I would reveal all on an Instagram Live.
But not on this podcast where everyone's family?
No, it's the audience is too big.
Oh, Jesus.
It lives on forever. True.
All right, fine. It does live on in perpetuity. Wow, scary to think about things on this podcast living in perpetuity.
I believe I said on my very first appearance that St. Louis was the worst city in America. So
you did, and that sort of calls back to your very first episode, which is called All Across America, where we talked almost exclusively about which American cities were bad and which ones were good. Something I really hope no one listens to, but now that I said it, they probably will.
And I would like to say I've since visited Phoenix, Arizona, and I would like to say Phoenix, Arizona is far worse than St. Louis.
Really? Yeah, Phoenix. Yeah. I don't know what it's offering. What is it offering?
Nothing. I had a show in historic downtown Phoenix. They kept saying it. Historic. It's the Arts District. Historic downtown Phoenix. It looks like a fucking Chipotle. everything down there. Because you forget, like, at least St. Louis, there's history there. It's an older city. You forget that a lot of stuff on the West, brand spanking new. There is no history. There is no culture. It's just teal. It's just a big teal Chipotle.
Oh, teal. Not teal.
It's not great.
Well, the thing, too, is, like, you just said St. Louis has a lot of history, and I'm racking my brain. And this is how you know I am in my hometown of Long Island, New York, because I'm like, what's the history on Long Island? Mark McGuire?
Hey, that's something.
That's something. There was a time when Mark McGuire, he was, I mean, look at me in my baseball hat. By the way, if you look behind me, look at all those trophies.
Oh my God. So mask.
It's incredible how mask I sort of am on Long Island. And I'm telling you, it comes out. You know, the top jumps out.
Your voice is deeper, in fact.
Deeper and darker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, that's part of having the gay cold.
I have the gay cold. I caught the gay cold finally over the weekend.
So you are a believer then in the gay cold. You would not sort of...
Yes, I believe that when gay people party for 5 weekends in a row and get, you know, no less than 4 hours of sleep for 5 days of those in a row every single week, that you will develop a cold. I do believe that.
Especially after a iconic period of... immune system suppression and over hand sanitation. We were iconically separated this Pride and 4th of July weekend. So I don't know how yours was. And that's something I can hear about.
My Pride?
Yeah. Well, how was your damn Pride? How was your 4th of July weekend? I'm not even going to see you on my Fire Island trip, which feels stupid.
My Pride was fucking fantastic. I was in San Francisco for all of it. And it was a delight. And listen, I think people sleep on San Francisco as a pride city. I think so. I mean, there were plenty of people that were visiting there, but you know, for my entire life, since I was a child, since I was 3 years old, since I could stand up, I said, I do pride in New York. That's where I do it. Okay. That's where the Stonewall riots happened.
Exactly.
That's where I need to be. Okay.
Yeah. That's where all the good floats are. All the good big floats, big banks.
Yeah. But there was actually, there was a riot before Stonewall that happened in San Francisco. It was called the Compton Cafeteria Riot.
Okay, professor.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You're an iconic professor.
Yeah. So in fact, I think it was more appropriate for me to spend my Pride in San Francisco. I had a lovely time. I saw a lot of my friends there. A lot of stuff happened. It is difficult because a lot of my friends who were there listened to this podcast. And so I don't want to dox them.
Don't dox them or yourself. It's actually a rule of culture number 99. Don't dox them or yourself. Don't do it. True or false, you like your San Francisco friends better than me?
Yes. True. Absolutely true. Okay. Absolutely true.
Is it because they're more fun? Is it because they're less fun? Why do you like them better than me? Because I know you do.
I would say I like them better than you because they're certainly kinder to me. They're a kinder bunch. They're more diverse. You know, that is than you.
Okay.
It does. You know, optically, it is a better look for me.
Of course, yeah, and that's important to constantly.
I literally in Puerto Vallarta before San Francisco, I met a guy and was making out with him, and like the third thing I said to him was like, "Why did you have to be white?"
God,
that is
because if you're photographed, people will drag.
Yeah, I get dragged for it all the time. I got dragged for it in San Francisco.
For hanging out with too many white gays?
Yeah. And two of them in the picture that I posted were Latino. So I don't even know. I can't win in this town.
I think you can win in this town. You just have to... Well, first of all, that's something that you get a lot?
Yeah. Check my DMs, babe. Check my fucking DMs.
How am I going to get in there? I know your privacy is ironclad. Well, that disappoints me. You feel like you can't be in a picture with me because people are going to say that guy's white? Fuck that. That makes me upset.
Well, I mean, you are Greek, and that is something.
You know, someone did look at me one time and say, is he some sort of not white? And then someone that they, the person they they asked that to turned to them and said, no. And they were, of course, right. I am exactly some sort of white. That is all I am.
What did I, we were talking today because I've been wearing a lot of ribbed tanks, formerly known as wife beaters.
And thank you for speaking that out loud. It's actually Rilla Culture number 107.
They're ribbed tanks.
Formerly known as wife beaters. Thank you very much for chewing the consonants on that one as well.
But somebody was like, why do they call them wife beaters? And I literally said, I think it's derogatory towards Greek people somehow.
No, it's, I think you know who it's derogatory towards is the sort of milk white asses, like your M&M types. You know what I mean? See. Your Detroiters.
I think that wife beater predates that, though.
Yeah, you know, it is really interesting. I think we've talked about this. I was explaining that item of clothing to someone, and the word wife beater just kind of flew out my mouth, suggesting that it's been in my mouth for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that we just accepted it, A, as what that item of clothing is called, and B, that it was an acceptable thing to sort of conjure up that imagery when simply stating what someone was wearing. And I remember I said it, and I immediately was like, oh my God, can you believe that I just called it that? And that we all, the collective we, called it that.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of my favorite things to be self-righteous about, actually, these days. It's one of my favorite things to be self-righteous about.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. We just said Eminem because I love to be self-righteous about Eminem too. So this
I think about you every time I say I stand something. Every time I say I stand something. And by the way, I have not changed the behavior. I'll continue to say it.
But no, I think say it about constantly. You every single. Yeah. I was like leading the charge of being like, we can't do this. It's an Eminem thing. And remember how painful he was. I love nothing more than to get on my soapbox about Eminem. One of the coolest things about me, I'd say, is how upset and angry and righteous I get when I think about Eminem.
And then the next day you turn around, I stan Ashley Simpson. I stan.
How did you know how to hurt me? How did you know how to hurt me and expose me?
I recently discovered, I was talking with a friend about this. Ashley Simpson is the perfect pop cultural reference. Mm-hmm. For almost all occasions. I was telling him about the Hollywood Bowl performance of Chicago and how
which apparently she slayed.
She slayed. She did slay. But I was like telling him about it and I was like, you know, they always cast it with like these weird C-list celebrities like Chicago with Ashley Simpson. And he thought I was fucking brilliant, first of all, because he thought he was like, wow, what an incredible improvised line. Like these two references together. And I was like, no, babe. This is real.
I'm just saying history, okay?
Yeah.
It's the glossary of St. Louis because it's history, baby.
It is fun to think about. It is fun to think about has-beens in the Hollywood Bowl. Like, 100%. Who is your has-been? What is your combo C-list celebrity? And
honestly, here's mine. Lisa Rinna and Harry Hamlin starring with Erica Jane in a Hollywood Bowl version of Chicago. I want Rinna. Wow. Playing Velma. I want Erica Jane doing Roxy, which she did. And also Roxy, of course, I mean, Rinna famously would not stop talking about how she did Roxy, but I also think she's got Velma in her. We see the way she moves. Voluptuous. Sure. And I think Harry Hamlin, I would like to see him do Billy Flynn.
I think that would be interesting.
Throw Countess Luann in there as the matron Mama Morton, because apparently she was this close to booking that gig.
Mm? So she says, let's be real.
She was out here like really saying it was happening. She's like, yeah, and I'm doing Chicago. That was my Countess Luann. And I'm doing Chicago. Man, I don't even think that was official.
Yeah, I want to see, Phil of the Future in Next to Normal.
Oh my God.
Whatever that kid's name is.
You want to see, yeah, wow, what is that kid's name? We're going to call him Phil of the Future. But you want to see sort of a bad Next to Normal. I don't want to see Next to Normal done badly. See these other shows, you can see done badly because it's the camp. Chicago, mm-hmm. We can see done badly. Next to Normal, did I ever tell you about the time I saw Next to Normal on Broadway?
No, but I can't wait to hear about it.
Well, I won the lottery. So you know how you could go like put your name in the lottery? I won. Yeah, nice. And we got to sit in the Lincoln seats, which I call them, because famously, you know, he sort of, what I'm saying is I was in like that mezzanine box. And I cried harder than I think I've ever cried in my life. next to my friend Mackenzie, who was like my friend. Like we were like sophomores in college, and I wept so hard at Alice Ripley. So anyway, I'm leaving. I thought you'd like to know. Remember her like iconic? Did you see it with her?
I didn't see it with her. No,
you fucked up.
I saw a summer stock theater production of it.
Who was in it? What did you even have a good?
No, nobody was good. Nobody was good.
Oh my god,
it was terrible.
What I would give to go back and see some of the stuff that was on Broadway when we were in New York.
What we need to do is get Alice Ripley on TikTok. Because do you remember the YouTube videos? Do you remember the YouTube videos of Alice Ripley just completely losing her mind on a video blog? We need Alice Ripley on TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, I think all these actresses of a certain age that are like sort of, you know, aging out of their types on Broadway, they should go to TikTok. Because that's where it's happening. And I do think like the Zoomer generation would respond to them because they have the tricks. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Vocal tricks. And this is the sort of thing like you can get Alice Ripley can get her tricks across in TikTok like that. Shoshana Bean is flopping not being on TikTok.
Well, see, I was talking more about Alice Ripley's like spoken word sort of Jet Fuel Can't Melt Steel Beams, that sort of
is she a denier?
You know what? That's the energy that she brings to those videos. I don't want to say for sure. I don't want to say with certainty that she is a denier, but that is definitely the energy, the vibe that she brings to those videos.
Oh my God, how iconic to bring 9/11 denier energy.
But she's got it.
Marion Cotillard.
Yeah. There are angels in this city.
There are angels in this city, and steel doesn't melt like that. By the way, speaking of Erica Jane, I haven't really gotten to download with you about the Housewives of it all.
Well, let's do it.
What are your fucking thoughts? Is she guilty? Is she
a criminal? She's absolutely guilty. Have you seen The Hustler and the Housewife?
I was waiting to watch it with Sudi. Can you sort of download me?
Well, there's really nothing new except like they're both at fault. They're both vile. They're both evil. It is worth watching the first 15 minutes just to have Danielle Staub try to explain how she knows Erica Jane. Because it's literally like she doesn't know Erica Jane. And she's literally like, yeah, we met one time and there was something about her. Like, and it's so clear she has no idea. They have no relationship. But that's fun. It is worth watching like the first 45 minutes of for sure. I don't think we need the full hour and a half, but
especially because Danielle Staub is apparently quite a large part of it. And by the way, if you didn't think it was going to happen, we already have our front runner for Cousin of the Week, which is Danielle Staub.
Yeah.
And I especially here on Long Island where I am, that is a Long Island cousin if I've ever seen one. Absolutely positive about information she does not have. That is, and also just her entire state of being.
You know what though? Also, I would say Alice is definitely in the running for Cousin of the Week too, because she's that older cousin that you still have to call aunt, even though she's not really your aunt. She's technically your cousin, but you call her Aunt Alice anyways because she's just so much older than everybody else.
Yes, because it would feel odd for her to be... She's not one of the cousins. She certainly doesn't sit at the kids' table.
No. Childless, husbandless.
100%.
The whole night.
But related and around. I've told you, though, that like literally when I was younger, I didn't know this until I started watching Real Housewives of New Jersey, but Melissa Gorga is peak hot cousin energy. Like when you're a little gay boy on Long Island, you want to be Melissa Gorga more than anything else. At least in the past two seasons when she's got like her like, sorry, but I mean, she would admit to this, like she's got her work like all the way done and gotten together and settled in. And she's like dressing better than ever. She is peak cousin energy. Gorga.
I mean, I don't see that. That's not my...
It's like, not your culture.
In the Midwest, it's not our culture to look like that.
No.
It's just not. We're much more of a sweatpants tucked into an Uggs. Like very platinum blonde.
Right.
That sort of...
Sort of like a younger Sutton Strack.
Maybe. Even like Brandy Glanville.
Oh, tough.
Yeah.
Well, but okay, so Erica Jane, she is guilty as per the housewife.
She is absolutely guilty. She's she knew something.
Okay.
She absolutely knew something.
I hate
that. And Andy is protecting her. Andy is protecting her in a way on this show that you know, he's my king. You know, he's my king.
Let me tell you something. He's my king too. And it's going to be a race. You're way ahead of me right now, but it's going to be a race.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see.
You know, I love to share boys with you.
Yeah, that is fully true.
But anyway, hey, King, if you're listening. But wait. Does the documentary allege that Andy is protecting her, or do you, Joel Kim Booster, allege that he is protecting her?
You watch the documentary and then you watch the show and you're like, this show is protecting Erica Jayne. Like, they're giving her this narrative. And who knows? Who knows what who knows what turns it will take by the end? I do think Garcelle smells a rat. Mm-hmm. I do think that she is on to her a little bit, but I don't know that we're going to get a ton of Erica Jayne is guilty on the show itself.
Well, Erica Jayne does not like her edit. Did you hear about this?
No.
And you know who's, by the way, you know who's been curiously silent on the Erica Jayne of it all is big Erica Jayne stan Meghan McCain. Curiously silent now that it seems Erica Jayne may be going to the big house, as they call it. Meghan McCain.
That's why she's leaving The View. She didn't want to comment on it.
She was like, I know this is going to become a top story and I have to leave now before it becomes ubiquitous in the culture. No. But basically, my thing is, like, if Erica Jayne is guilty and she doesn't like her edit because I guess they show her sort of flaunting her wealth in the early episodes, like, and I think she's unhappy about it all, then does she continue on the show? And if she doesn't continue on the show, what happens? Does she go to jail? Is it like that bad? Or is it like, you know, non-felonious, like attached to your like insanely, you know, felon husband? I don't know. What is it?
You know, something about me is that I'm not a legal expert. And I've been saying that for years.
This is why we need a Sunny Hostin on the show. This is why we need a Sunny to cut to and go, can you explain this to us?
But I'm absolutely going to speak out of turn and say she flips. She flips. She gets a plea she gets a plea bargain. She flips. She goes back to waiting tables. She does Erica Jayne performances on the weekends. She loses Mikey.
Oh, I want the scene where she has to fire him. I want the scene where she looks at her fucking books, realizes she can't keep Mikey, and has to sort of call him over. And in a much more dramatic breakup than anything she could have ever had with Tom Girardi, has to let Mikey go.
Yeah.
And
it's such a shame because I don't think he's done. I don't think he's done with the work that he wants to do. Like, he came back, he's got those all-star lips now, but I think he wants the teeth too, babe.
I think he wants the teeth. I think he's in this for a long time. I think he's in this for an eventual eye lift. I mean, I think he's in this for a long haul. And I think he's got more to say. I think Mikey has more to say creatively, and I want him on the team still. I'm just upset. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess I didn't realize I liked Erica Jayne this much, but I really don't want her to be. I don't want her to be a criminal.
I've been done with Erica Jayne for a couple of seasons now. I don't need her on the show. She gives nothing. What has she given in the last two seasons? She gives nothing. And we've now got Dorit. Dorit gives the looks. Dorit brings the drama. Mm-hmm. Dorit brings her goofy little accent. We don't need Erica.
Yeah, I forget that's true.
Go back and watch that confrontation on the boat. I showed this to you over quarantine.
You're right.
This is what kept us going in quarantine, was this confrontation on the boat where Dorit says, you are cold and you bring nothing. And she was right. Dorit, back and watch that fight on the China boat. She was right. Dorit was right. Believe all Dorit's.
You actually are 100% right that Dorit sort of handled Erica in that moment that I think I said to you, like, and I think Dorit's response was not in Erica's playbook. It's like Erica doesn't get spoken back to like that. Like,
no,
when
man.
Erica says, when Erica Jayne says to anyone, you're jealous of me, the response that she thinks she's going to get is, you're right, and I'm afraid of you too. And Dorit was like, hold on, wait, pause it all. I'm not jealous of you. I'm not afraid of you. I don't like you. Why? What is there to like about you? I find you to be really cold and not fun to be around. And you're a bully. And I think that's why Dorit is still there today and Teddy is not. Because Teddy was shaking like a leaf the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like a leaf.
Like and without the looks. You have to bring
no looks.
Some column A, some column B. She had no columns.
No,
she was collapsed.
Talk about your Midwest cousin. That's Teddy Mellencamp.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about sweatpants tucked into an UGG.
That's Teddy Mellencamp.
That's T. Mellencamp. And we say now, that with all the love in the world for John Cougar Mellencamp. And
where are we? Where are we? Sutton v. Crystal.
Okay. So here's the thing. I am a Slutton. I am a Slutton.
Wow.
And I identify as a Slutton.
Tell me you're that girl. Tell me you're that girl. You're a Slutton.
But I'm not that girl. And I was with Crystal the entire way throughout that entire thing. And I was like, Crystal to me is killing it. She's crushing it. I think that she could eventually one day move to center couch because I think that she will be the one to start in ultimately with Kyle or Dorit. And I think she'll be able to handle herself because I think she's smart. I think she's rich in a real way. I think she can back up everything she says. And I think she's, and I say this with all the love in the world for her, a fucking
a
bitch.
She's a bitch. She's a bitch.
Bitch. And I think it's like aspirational. She's like, she genuinely believes in her heart of hearts. Like, ultimately, I could walk away from Sutton right now and she would think about it forever and I could get over it. And I kind of am. I just think she sort of overplayed her hand here. Sutton walking into her bedroom of it all. I think that she is going to learn from this because I think she went a little too far and gave them fodder with this thing of the violating of it all. Like Crystal being like, Sutton walked into my bedroom and I wasn't dressed and it was a violation. That language is going to give these white women who are like super concerned about cancellation and super like, that's a very damning accusation. That's a very big word that you're throwing around there, Crystal. Like she's going to give them ammunition to be like, shame on you for making Crystal seem to be this person. And actually even Garcelle thought it was too much.
And I was really hoping for an alliance there. And it almost happened. Crystal would have been smarter to harp more on Sutton's I don't see race issue and less on the violation issue. It would have been a better play.
I think it just got exhausting for her, though, that plotline. I wouldn't want to continue that plotline either, would you? Like,
no.
To be the one on the show that's having to handle someone that is so much... It's like this with Dr. Tiffany Moon on Dallas. I think she got so bogged down in the Brandy storyline and then also with, what's-her-face, Cameron. And you're talking about women who are, I'm sorry, but so much dumber than her. That it's like, at a certain point, you have to feel shitty for even like allowing yourself to continue the storyline because it's not going to go anywhere because you're not playing with people with a full deck. And I think that Crystal saw the way that Sutton was responding to all of everything Crystal was saying about like just trying to walk it back and being like, you can't be a person that says, I don't see race. That's not the way we do things anymore. Like, understand that my situation is more different, is more difficult. And I think she just realized that Sutton was not operating at a level where she could get that in that moment or at all. So she kind of backed off.
I mean, these women need hazard pay. Every person of color on a show that is predominantly white on one of these franchises deserves hazard pay for the educating that they have. They are backed into a corner to do. They have no choice but to do it. Mm-hmm. But we have to stop talking about housewives.
No, because the one thing I want to... First of all, why do you say that to me?
I'm just aware of people who listen to this show who don't watch the Housewives.
Oh, why? Because they live in San Francisco?
That I know people who don't live in San Francisco who also don't listen to the Housewives.
I want to say one more thing, which is that I couldn't give a shit less about New York this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Leah really overplayed her hand. She really overplayed her hand. This happens with second season. This happens all the time with girls who have good first seasons or good seasons even. They go in high on their own supply. They think their shit don't stink. They think they can get away with anything. They think they can say anything, including I'm not going to vote in the 2020 election. And fuck. She lost me.
No, that was definitely a flashback to a very bad emotional time for all of us when we were dealing with people like Leah, who were like these gorgeous, rich, white, blonde women who are like, I'm just so fucking pissed at the whole thing. I'm like, I'm probably not going to vote. I'm just like, it's tough. And I think because she presents as so cool, she gets away with a lot of shit.
Yeah, and it's just, but like the coolness of it all is like so manufactured that the cracks are showing this season. The cracks are showing in a way where it's like, and also just go fucking home. I'm so tired of her being like, my grandmother is dying and I have to be on this vacation right now. Go home, bitch.
Go home. Just go home. All right, you know what? Moving away from this, how would you rate your excitement level on a 1 through 10 scale for Black Widow? Because I don't know about my own number.
Really? I would have thought you would be an 8 or a 9. Because I'm fairly an 8, I would say.
And are you a Black Widow fan?
I'm a lady fan.
Same.
You know?
But then
I'm a prestige actress fan.
So you would consider...
And we're getting three of them in one movie.
That's true. And we did hear... Lewis did say that he felt the movie was not bad. But for Lewis, that's huge. Yeah, because he hates Marvel. But Rachel Weisz didn't have a lot to do. Florence is fun. And Scarlett kind of just does what she does. Which is honestly what I was expecting from this. I guess I think that maybe the Black Widow... I just don't find her to be the most compelling Marvel character. And I think that you kind of know what she's been through already, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is she's sort of a utility player narratively, you know, like they slot her in a lot of spaces in the movie. And she serves a function in each movie that is sort of like immaterial to her character. Like she plays a very specific role in Winter Soldier. She plays a much different
love
role
in Ultron. Though. Yeah.
She plays, you know, they do sort of like use her for whatever they need in that movie specifically. And I just think that like there is not a lot of there yet because we haven't had a movie that focuses on her yet.
Here's a question I have for you as someone who is a major Marvel fan and someone that watches it very closely and knows it from different angles, not just the movies. Do you think that the character of the Black Widow is used movie to movie in a way that is truthful to her character because she's looking for connection and looking for a family? Or do you think that Scarlett Johansson is often placed in these movies because they want some sort of will they or won't they with whoever the male lead is of that movie? Because when I watched Winter Soldier, there's like a few moments, like especially this moment in the car. There's like this actually kind of cool moment in for the Marvel movies at that point anyway, in the Winter Soldier where Captain America and the Black Widow are driving in the car and it's a really quiet scene. There's like this like sort of like slow song playing on the radio and they're having this like conversation about where they belong in the world. And it's like sort of romantic. And I'm like, are they intimating that that's a thing? And then also... there's like a huge romantic plotline throughout the movies with the Hulk and Black Widow, and they even kiss. And then in Avengers Endgame, famously her last scene, spoiler alert, is with Hawkeye, played by Jeremy Renner, and it's intimated that they also have had a romantic history.
I don't think that's quite as clear. I think that they have always... That's one of the consistencies, I think, from...
It's very loaded. It's very charged.
From Age of Ultron is that they're very close. Budapest or whatever they reference a couple of times in the movies. Like, this is just like Budapest or some shit. Like, I do think that they have like a closeness. I think that they have both similarly like dark pasts that only they are aware of. But I don't think the Endgame thing was supposed to be romantic. I think it was familial. I think it was completely familial.
Interesting. Because, yes, Hawkeye in the movies is very much with Linda Cardellini.
One of the biggest wastes, I would say, second biggest wastes of a great actress in the Marvel Universe. And you know what number one is. Rachel McAdams. I've said it on this podcast before. I'll say it again. We need to get her new agents. Who is repping Rachel McAdams?
Yeah, I think that Rachel McAdams suffers from... I think she suffers from fifth choice syndrome. I've said this on this podcast before. I think that Rachel McAdams doesn't deserve this at all, but I think this is what happens with her. I think that she's so good at everything. And she had that breakout moment in like 2004 where she was like the lead of The Notebook and Regina George, and she was in Red Eye, and she so likable and amazing in Wedding Crashers. And then she was in Family Stone and did this great character performance, and I believe had supporting actress buzz for that, and was just everywhere, that I think people didn't see her in a specific enough way. And I think they didn't know what movies to really either write for her or push her for or whatever. So what happened was she sort of became this person who was like on everyone's list, but not first. And she also sort of popped off in the Jennifer Lawrence era. And so this, I just think what happened to her is there weren't enough good parts for women at that time in film. And she was specifically popping off in film. And it would be a few years until that was a little bit better. And it's still not that much better because now TV is queen.
TV is queen. She had her opportunity on TV, though.
That wasn't her fault.
I know it wasn't her fault, but like, why haven't we been? Where's her Mare of Easttown?
It's got to be coming. Because think about how on paper she's made every right decision in the world.
It's true. And if Mean Girls came out today, she would have been nominated for it.
100% You know, we're so much kinder now to not only just comedic performances, but also comedic performances from women. I mean, like, that Melissa McCarthy nomination was, like, huge. And they always did this. I mean, to be honest with you, like, if there were going to be broad comedy performances honored, like, it would happen in that category. I mean, all the way going back to, like, Cactus Flower with Goldie Hawn, or, like, you know, Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny. Like, always, yes, but high school, never. I do think it would be better now. I think you're right. In what we call the Haley Steinfeld era. And she had to ride a fucking horse.
She had to do that goofy accent. I think, you know, and I just watched Clueless again today.
Ugh.
Brittany Murphy. Absolutely. I have said this. I said this across the table from my friend, our friend, Matt Whitaker, and he scoffed in my face. I said, if Brittany Murphy were alive today, she would have been nominated for an Oscar. She would have had a crossover moment. She was the moment, and she continues to be the moment.
You are 100% right, Jill Kambuster, and it's why you've been on this podcast 700 times and why you are an Icon Award winner. Aren't you? Are you a Las Culturistas Icon Award winner?
I think Pat's won it like 3 times. I don't think I have won it.
I have an announcement. As of tonight, Joel Kim, you have won the Las Culturistas Icon Award for coming in on The Clutch, and you are going to get a gift. This is really exciting, because for saying... Do you want to give a quick speech?
Yeah, I would like to thank the Wi-Fi in the Dominican Republic for keeping Bowen off this podcast. I would like to thank Matt for, you know, needing to fill time and forgetting that I hadn't won the award in the first place and mistakenly believing that I had. And I'd like to thank, of course, Brittany Murphy for being sort of the launching pad of my greatest take on this podcast that I've probably said on the podcast before. But, you know, it's been a year and a half since I've really needed to comment on culture. So
please wrap up.
Okay. Please wrap up. They're playing me off. There really are angels in this city.
Wow, that Oscar song is so iconic, isn't it? That like... We all know it. Wait, okay, so Brittany Murphy 100% would have been at least nominated for an Oscar at this point, and I really think she would be prestige TV actress in the vein of Elizabeth Moss, because I believe that she missed her moment to really show us what she could do when there was going to be a lot more opportunity for her, because every single time she was in anything, she scored. Weren't you there when we just watched Drop Dead Gorgeous?
Yeah.
Incredible in that. And no one thinks of her when they think of that movie.
No. Nobody thinks of Amy Adams either. Amy, no. Listen, we talk about Kirstie Alley. We talk about Kirstie Alley.
We okay? really do.
We really do. But what we do not talk about with Kirstie Alley is Kirstie Alley turning to Amy Adams on the set of Drop Dead Gorgeous and saying, you need to move to LA. And Kirstie Alley is the reason we have Arrival, is the reason we have Junebug, is the reason we have the worst parts of Julie and Julia, is the reason. She is the reason. And so, yes, Kirstie Alley is a kook. Yes, she is a Scientologist. But I think karmically, she balanced things out by giving us Amy.
She also, unfortunately, turns that fucking movie all the way out. She's so good at it. And she's also so good in It Takes Two. Oh, my God. I fucking love It Takes Two. Steve Guttenberg and her, hot. Also, Steve Guttenberg, hot. What the fuck?
Is he?
Yes. Yes. Literally, yes. Look it up.
He feels like the kind of hot that is only hot in the 90s, though. Like, men don't look like that.
You know what? He's that type of, like, young Jerry Seinfeld attractive, where you're right. like, sure, you bang these women. You know what I mean?
Sure, you're
attracted to him despite yourself, sort of because you've been conditioned to. Big conversation incoming.
You know who's sort of an analog to that, I would say? Who's sort of the Steve Guttenberg of today? John Reynolds. John Reynolds has the very same vibe, where I would fuck the shit out of John Reynolds.
But yeah, I would let him fuck me for sure.
But he does have that same Guttenberg, young Seinfeld, young Billy Crystal. I never got Billy Crystal until I saw When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny? He's way out of his league in that movie, but you still get it. You really do still get it. And, like, you ever seen City Slickers?
No.
He is that kind of like a blue jean, New York, like curmudgeon vibe. Hair has been receding probably since he was 8 years old. That vibe where you're still like, I'd still fuck you. And I also think this is annoying to say, but like in the 90s, like whenever Jerry Seinfeld had those like hot girlfriends, whenever he was dating like Terry Hatcher, like peak Terry Hatcher in the 90s, I didn't question a thing. I was like, yeah. For sure they're fucking him.
Absolutely.
But this is what I wanted to say. So speaking of Haley Steinfeld and Black Widow, so this is relative to you and your interests. You know that Haley Steinfeld is MCU because you know she's the new Hawkeye.
Yeah, I did know that. I think that's amazing. Is it Kate Bishop? Is that who she's playing?
She's Kate Bishop.
Yeah.
And did you know that one of these sort of fun crossovers that's happening in the MCU series is Florence Pugh is in the Hawkeye series. So this sort of lends to my point earlier about the Black Widow and Hawkeye connection of it all, because you know that Florence Pugh is going to show up, sort of, I guess, the long lost sister of Scarlet.
Natasha
Romanoff. And you know that Jeremy Renner is going to give his classic, like, steely-eyed glances over at her like, why is this girl reminding me of someone from my past?
I mean, I hope we don't get that. I hope that they make a better choice, but I can absolutely see that happening. And I think, speaking of Haley Steinfeld, is frontrunner for title event.
Speaking of Haley Steinfeld, .. That's a frontrunner for title of app. And that is how I know that you truly were the person to come here, because you know to offer the title of app. Speaking of Haley Steinfeld, .. parentheses with special, with ultra special guest, Joel Kim Booster. Can I congratulate you, by the way? I'm so excited for you. The Fire Island movie is going to be incredible. And can I say, with a gentleman I'm seeing, I recently just watched Bride and Prejudice.
Yes.
And I loved it. And I also ordered a special fresh copy of Pride and Prejudice. And I'm going to watch the Kira version as well. And I'm like watching all these.
Kira version is brilliant.
I love, and I can't wait to watch it again. And I'm just like really soaking into the story again. God damn, what a fucking classic that is. And how well it works. To map it onto the situation that you're mapping it on. I want to know, just like, not to like really seriously interview, but like, what made you think of that?
Honestly, it happened in like 2015 when we were there for the first time. It was the book that I brought to read. And I was literally just in the midst of reading Pride and Prejudice, looking around at this island and looking at the ways in which like our culture is sort of compressed in a very like specific way on the island. There are no straight people. There are no straight mm-hmm. people except the teenage girls that work in the canteen.
Which pantry. Are my favorite That's girls. Yeah, and I'm so excited to see them next week. All my Amandas.
They need a Bravo reality show. Like
100%.
It's the insane market. It's insane to say like Fire Island needs a show, but it needs to be about the straight girls who work in the pantry. But those of you who know, those girls have seen it all. They've seen it all.
You know, those were all my girlfriends in high school. All my girlfriends in high school. I'm talking about Allison. I'm talking about Alex. I'm talking about both Emily's. I'm talking about Sam. I'm talking about Kate. I'm talking about Brittany. I'm talking about Lorianne. All of them worked in the Ocean Bay Park Market. And they were those girls in the loose buns, their hair slopped up in a loose bun with an oversized sweatshirt, pre-Ariana, wearing Nike slides
looking
and
like,
socks.
Looking like green M&M. Every single
literally,
one.
Literally. And also like sort of a little bit of makeup from the night before and lacrosse shorts. Sleepy all day from 6 a.m. when they get there to 5 p.m. when they leave or switch over with another girl named the same name as them. I'm telling you. So yes, you are 100% right. They are the only straight women there. Continue your point.
Anyways, and it just like, listen, Jane Austen, like if you read it again, I know many of us were forced to read Jane in high school mm-hmm. and it didn't, and many people didn't connect. I didn't connect with it until I was in college. But like her social observations are so prescient and, mm-hmm. and especially the ways in which we conceal the harm that we do to each other under social niceties. And it is so gay. It is just so gay. Like she created, she clocked what shade is before we had a word for it.
Carolyn Bingley like, was the original,
Laomi.
That is the rule of culture number 54. Caroline Bingley was the original Laomi.
Laomi.
Oh my God. Iconic.
But no, and I was like, the ways in which class sort of map onto the way in which class map, like, exists in the gay community, not just class as we know it, like, financially, but I think, like, looking a certain way is its mm-hmm. own sort of class. Race is its own sort of class in our community. And like, it just, you know, it started as a joke. It literally started as a joke. I would joke about it constantly. And I'm going to write a movie about Fire Island that takes place that is a Pride and Prejudice remake. And I never meant to do it. And then a while ago, I wrote an essay about Jane Austen and Pride and Fire Island and my agent. And literally, the only good thing my agent has ever done, David, I hope you're listening to this, and I hope you know that I think you've done nothing for my career except for this one thing. But he read that essay, and he was like, you should make this a show. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing you've ever said. Never talk to me again. Nobody will ever read that. And then on a plane ride to Japan, I wrote a spec script for what was originally going to be a show. And then eventually, things happened and I sold it to Quibi. And
the
rest
that.
Is history.
And the rest is
remember
history.
Remember Quibi?
And, do I ever? Yeah. You know what's funny? It's like when Quibi launched, I was like, I'm so happy we're one of the first. And now I'm like, God, Joel really dodged a bullet by not being one of the first to launch with Quibi. Because honestly, had this come out with Quibi, it doesn't get made at Hulu.
It doesn't.
With Fox Searchlight.
It is incredible. I mean, yes, the pandemic did take my father, but did it give me a movie at Hulu? It did, absolutely. So it all really evens out in the end. Also, I recently went home with a guy and he turned on his TV and the Roku thing came up. And I was like, oh my God, you have Roku. And I was not as excited about it. I was sort of like, oh my God, you have Roku? But in the back of my head, I was like, we could watch a Quibi original.
You know what? You could have watched a game show, all episodes of season one streaming on Roku, but I don't think it's necessarily like a horny
out.
Show. And singled out. Yeah, I have to say, like, I was one of those people that in high school, I believe in my AP comp or AP Lit. An AP Lit.
Smart, I was genius.
Is very much a genius. Get this. I did win in my grade. I won the English award. Like, I was the best English student in my class, says the English department. Okay? Says the English department, not me. Don't get mad at me. Don't write me letters. Write the AP Lit department or the English department at ISOP High School letters, okay? From you know, however many years ago, 2008, as I shrivel and die. But I did read Pride and Prejudice, and it kind of missed me. And then in reading your piece about it that you wrote, and then in reading the script, honestly, I really, like, I sought it out again, and I watched the movie again, which I, of course, watched when it came out and enjoyed. Like, I would watch any movie that has Oscar buzz, or any movie with Keira Knightley. I do love her. But I've really found myself enjoying it more and more and more. And, like, your script, too. I've just enjoyed so much, because what I love about it and what I'm so excited for everyone to see is that it's extremely truthful to the experience of being on Fire Island and the experience of being, I think, a gay man and a group of gay friends, and especially a gay man and a group of gay friends that's been a group of friends for a long time, and there's been changes to that. It does feel like that mapping of the forgive me but chosen family onto the actual family really tracks. And it's just going to be really fun. And I just don't know that we've had, like, a definitive, and not that it has to be definitive at all. It doesn't, and it's not trying to be, but I think it'll be really fun to have this movie take place here, because there's history in the story that we're telling, and there's also history in the place we're telling it. So I think it's really exciting, Jolie, and I'm really happy for you. I'm proud of you.
I'm very excited. It's the biggest thing to ever happen in my life, and I'm nervous and I'm scared, but I'm mostly really excited. You know, like, this is the year of Joel. It is the year of
it me. Is the
and
year
I,
of
and
Joel.
I refuse to accept otherwise. I will get every single fucking thing that I want.
Yeah, baby, you deserve it. Well, then right after that, you're going to go, what? Shoot your fucking show Loot with Maya Rudolph? What the fuck is
this? Yes, 3 days after we wrap, I start shooting that show. Which is really on exciting. Apple? It is on Apple. It is stars Maya Rudolph. It's Alan Yang. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say that they wrote the part for me, which is really fucking nice. Awesome. There's lines about being gay and Asian and from Illinois in the side. So I read it and I was like, well, if I don't book this, then there's a problem. We have a bigger problem than
then
me.
That's a real shame. You find out that's the thing I book. Then everyone gets really mad.
It was a lot. And I really needed it, because I was really coming down from a lot of Molly when I found out. I was coming down. Here's a fun peek behind the curtain. When I shot my episode of iCarly, completely in a come down. Just completely.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. I believe, what was that after? What event was that after? Because I think I was
after that was after my friend Chris's 30th birthday in San Diego, which is the Florida of the US. Just the Florida. It is incredible. We tried to play volleyball on the beach, and the straight reaction to a bunch of gay men playing volleyball was such that it was like, it was either people making fun of us or people being like, oh my God, yes,
go for it.
Go, yes, it is okay. That what you're doing is okay.
It's so
what
great.
What you're doing is okay.
Can and I ask you a question?
Yeah, we know we're playing fucking volleyball, you freaks.
Just to drive home, like, that San Diego is the Florida of the West Coast, like, are there jet skis there?
Oh, yeah.
Then there you
oh,
go.
Oh, yeah.
Then it might specifically be the Tampa of the West Coast, which higher praise I cannot give.
Yeah.
And the West Coast needs a Tampa. That's for sure.
Every coast needs a Tampa.
Every coast needs a Tampa. Well, you know, actually, famously, the Gulf Coast has a Tampa, and then I guess the East Coast really doesn't. What's the Tampa of the East Coast? Might be Fire Island.
It might be Fire Island.
By the time I get there, anyway.
You can make anything Tampa.
I truly can. Wait. I've never been on a jet ski.
What? Okay. Speaking of jet skis, have you been watching Loki?
Okay. And this I wanted to touch on with you. Have not. But that's only because I've sort of been traveling a lot, and, like, I don't have my I don't have Disney Plus on my computer. I guess I could obviously easily log on to it, but I kind of want to watch it like in the comfort of my own home on my Apple TV Plus. Can you sort of explain to me and the readers about Loki being bisexual? And how does this connect with the themes of the piece?
I don't think it is.
Why is he bi?
It is not connected. I think it just tracks with the character. He's, you know, a trickster god. And as we know, bisexuals trick people.
They are chaotic that is their tricksters. MO.
They yeah, are it's chaotic actually, tricksters.
Should I make that a rule of culture?
Nah. Yes, you should. Yes,
okay, fine. Should. But I'm easily convinced. Rule of culture number 54. Bisexuals are chaotic tricksters. Into the canon. JK. That's in the rule. Megan McCain, if you're out there, that's in the rule book. Oh, I see her off screen. She's shaking her head no. She threw her pen on the ground. Oh, it's not a pen, it's a quill. Anyway, go ahead, Julie.
Anyways, yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with the plot. He mentions like fucking guys and girls and it's. That's it. That's literally it.
All right, interesting. And so,
but it's great. I think texturally, it feels much different than anything else in the MCU because you know they have the house style. I think that like there are a lot of fun characters in it. I think there's a lot of fun performances in it. I think Owen Wilson is a lot of fun in it. I think there's an iconic character named Miss Minutes in it.
Miss Minutes,
that is voiced Miss Minutes, babe, and she is voiced by one Tara Strong. Like you gotta get into it.
How's Gugu in it?
Gugu? What? How do you solve a problem like Gugu?
I think easily. I think you just keep giving her parts because something's going to work. And I actually think she was incredible on The Morning Show. And also, readers, if you haven't watched Beyond the Lights, you got to watch Beyond the Lights. Have you seen Beyond the Lights?
Incredible and Beyond the
Lights. Amazing. And I love Gina Prince-Bythewood. I love everything she does.
Very fun in Miss Sloan, if you've seen that. But we have not found a home for Gugu.
No.
And I don't think it's Loki. We still need to try. Like, she is the glass slipper, and we are traveling around the television landscape trying to find the correct genre and role for Gugu.
But you know, maybe Gugu is just a character actress that we see plugged in places. I mean, there could be worse things. Laura Dern was that for many years, and then all of a sudden she became Laura Dern. Maybe we're just far away from the Gugu-sance.
I think we'll get there. I mean, she looks incredible. She looks like she hasn't aged a day. So she has.
She's a beautiful, beautiful woman. Shocking. So what does she do in the show?
She's sort of a boss. She's like the boss of Owen Wilson. She is, a middle manager. She's a middle manager, which again feels like sort of a waste. Like she does get some action. It's fun to see Gugu in action. It's fun to see her wield a sword. You know, you love to see Gugu wield a sword.
Sure. Hate to pivot this harshly away from Gugu and maybe the fact that I am is telling, but would we fuck Owen Wilson in it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would almost always fuck him.
Yeah. Depressed or not depressed, it doesn't matter. I would fuck Owen Wilson.
I've
thought that way. You know, a sexually formative memory for me is the bathtub scene in Shanghai Noon.
I literally knew you were going to say that because that was probably when you were what, 14?
If you were 14, I was slightly older, but I think I was younger than that because I had never seen myself reflected on screen, a hot Asian man in a bathtub naked with a hot white man, you know? Mm-hmm. And that is my experience. That is my lived experience. And it was so beautiful for me to see that reflected back to me on screen.
Do you think that Jackie Chan got hate DMs from being photographed, filmed even, in a bathtub with a white man?
I think he probably did. Shame. I think he probably did. I think he probably invented Instagram. People invented Instagram so that they could DM Jackie Chan about that scene in Shanghai Noon.
Where is Jackie now?
You know what? I don't know.
Probably too old for all of it.
He was in a movie recently called like The Foreigner, which is unfortunate.
That's rough.
Yeah, it is not. It's sort of not where you want to see Jackie Chan now. But he's still kicking it. He's still around.
still kicking it. Yeah, like he kicks a cinder block right in half in so many of his films. Anyway,
okay, what else are you watching?
Can I tell you? This is one reason why I'm really upset that Bowen couldn't log on is because he has been getting really into In Treatment. And have you watched In Treatment?
I saw this on Bowen's story and I thought to myself, I should watch In Treatment. But instead, I turned on CBS's Evil instead.
Oh, God. I never want to watch something on CBS.
Even The Good Wife?
The Good Wife I would watch / get into, and I would even do that with The Good Fight, but I just feel like it is too many episodes of too long.
We have reached a point now where you tell somebody that it's 7 seasons and 22 episodes per season, and it's untenable.
What am I supposed to do?
Unless there's another pandemic, unless there's another shutdown, no one's doing that. No one.
Baby, I can barely get through a limited series 10 episodes. Like, and that's long to me now. Now it's like, yeah, I need things to be 6 or 7 in a hot 46 minutes, like Ms. Mayer. But nowadays, well, it's like, and like, I could never, I think The Good Wife is the last prestige show that was like on network, 24 episodes of a full length hour show that people are like, you could still watch this and enjoy. No one's watching Lost now. No, people are not doing it.
No.
I mean, they should.
You need to have Pat Regan on to talk about Manifest. But you know what? You know what really secured me of my attention span recently that I watched is Steven Universe. Have you seen?
No. What is that?
Steven Universe is a cartoon by Rebecca Sugar. The episodes are 11 minutes long, if that. Okay? Uh-huh. And it starts out, it seems very simple. It seems like very tropey. It is like you watch the first episodes and they sort of drop you in to the middle of this story. It's about a little boy who is a gem and then his three like aunt figures who are also gems and they protect the world. And it's like, if you've seen Sailor Moon, you get the vibe almost immediately. And it just is so brilliant how over the course of 5 seasons, they layer in little bit by bit. And you think you're watching a standalone show. You think you're watching sort of like an Adventure Time, like nonsense, like every episode is self-contained and it restarts and the stakes restart at each episode. But you slowly realize that the show is like building upon its own lore until a point at which by the end of it, it is one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. And there's a movie and there's music. The voice talent on this show, Patti LuPone, Nicki Minaj, Amy Mann.
This is crazy.
Estelle is one of the main voice actors. And the show is queer as hell. There are so many trans allegories in it. There are literal lesbians kissing on the show.
Steven Universe. And how do we watch it?
Steven Universe. It's on HBO Max.
Okay, I love that. No, and now you're talking my language. Go. Well, I was going to say, speaking of HBO Max, I got to watch Space Jam 2 early.
What?
Because
you've got to save our son.
Joel, I screamed, you need to win this game and get our son back. I was... By the way, that is Sonequa Martin Green from Star Trek Discovery committing all the way. She's from the Sarah Paulson School of bad script and full 100% commitment.
Yeah.
She serves every inch of this playing LeBron's wife. So Space Jam 2 is pretty much exactly Space Jam 1, but you drag and drop like all new references for the old one. So it's like, it's just so funny because it's literally the same, but it was fun, I guess. I mean, and the reason I watched it is because, and this is my announcement to the readers, I'm going to be hosting HBO Max Movie Club, which is a podcast presented by iHeart and HBO Max, which is going to feature me and some special guests. Perhaps we're even looking at one. Talking about movies that are on the HBO Max platform, that are coming out, that are classic movies on the platform. I'm actually doing... do you like Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, love Keanu.
Okay, so maybe you'll come on for my Keanu episode that I'm doing. So they want to do an all Keanu episode. So it's going to be like Point Break, Matrix, Speed.
John Wick.
you know, all the girls that are on the platform. So maybe you'll come on for my Keanu episode, because I was going to have Joel Kim on to talk about the movie Freaky. Because one thing I said to these people, so basically it's like I'm watching all these movies and then hosting with comedian friends of mine, or like, you know, people from that actually made the movie. It's going to be really, really cool. Actors, directors, whatever. And it starts very soon. I told them when they asked me to do the gig, I was like, just so you know, it's like a thing. I cannot watch scary movies. Like oftentimes even suspense thrillers, like I can't really get through because it makes me too anxious. And I told them this, and then they were like, it's fine. Nothing on the list is too scary. And then they go, okay, so week two is going to be freaky. Flashback to when you and I were at Jared's house and you guys, I think, tricked me by some bisexuals.
No, it was always, always, always in the plan.
No,
we went to Jared's house specifically to watch Freaky.
Well, all I know is it was on for, I think, about 45 seconds before I left the house. I was like, I cannot do this.
You were there for longer than 45 minutes. You got up and you stood behind the couch,
mm-hmm.
a distance away, several yards away, around a corner. And you watched the opening scenes of Freaky from around a corner.
I got the fuck out of there, despite the fact that both of them told me, if you leave, we're going to be really mad. And I was like, well, it's worth it to get into fights with my friends than to sit here. Because I don't know what it is, readers. I really, and it's not like, it hasn't always been like this. I think just, I just get really anxious watching scary movies. I don't know what it is. And you're talking to someone who loves haunted houses. I've been skydiving. Like, I do, quote unquote, scary stuff. I mean, I'm out here in the world. But I told them, I was like, I really can't do scary movies. And then they were like, okay, well, the second week is Freaky. And I was like, okay, well, I know exactly who to get on. Someone that's seen the movie and watched what happened to me when I tried to watch it. But now that episode is postponed and they want to do a Keanu episode instead. So I'm happy to hear that you love Keanu, because you'll come on for that
episode.
Oh, and
we can watch Much Ado About Nothing, one of my favorite Keanu Reeves performances.
And It's Complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Little known Keanu vehicle.
That would be really funny is if we did a Keanu Reeves episode, but we didn't do The Matrix or John Wick or any of his big movies. We did Much Ado About Nothing and It's Complicated.
And It's Complicated. And this is like earlier in his career when he could like, sort of, and I say this with love, but barely act, and it wasn't like part of it yet. It was like they were like Keanu in the beginning, like they were giving him roles and they were like, oh, he'll like learn to act, and then he never did, and everyone was like, but now it's part of it. But in the beginning of his career, I remember he was in Dracula and he says the word Europe like Europe, and it's iconic. I watched it in high school and I loved it, and I love Keanu so. But anyway, it's great that I get to tell you all that I'm doing this podcast, which I hope you listen to as well. It'll be really fun. I am qualified to do this as someone who was once told by Bowen Yang that I maybe should think about getting a Letterboxd. So this is me now hosting a movie podcast.
I don't get Letterboxd. What is Letterboxd?
I think it's just for fags to sort of jump on and review shit.
Okay.
You know?
Isn't this sort of your Letterboxd?
The reason I was talking about this was because the first episode is Space Jam 2. That's why I was talking about it. So that's how I got to see Space Jam 2 early.
I'm so glad you found it. I'm so glad that we circled back to this.
So at this point in the episode, about an hour and 16 minutes is when I say, Bowen, shouldn't we do I Don't Think So, Honey? And he usually says, yes. So now I'm going to say to you, Joel Kim, should we do I Don't Think So, Honey?
Yes, I guess I'm still unclear about what mine is going to be. Again, melatonin. I was asked to do this at the last minute. I'm in a cold. I'm in a weird headspace. Everybody has to just chill out. Everybody just chill out.
I don't think that you're going to get negative feedback for, I don't think you possibly could. I mean, think about what a high you're on. You're doing the movie. You got this show with Maya. You got you've survived the gay cold. You got San Francisco friends who are cooler than the ones you had before. I mean, so much is going well for you. And you're also going to get to hear my I Don't Think So, Honey, which of course is going to happen first, as it always does.
Do you need me to time?
I Don't Think So, Honey, yes, is a 1-minute sort of rant, really, a fevered manner of speech where Bowen and I and a guest, and tonight Joel and I, go off, in quotes, as the kids say, on an item of culture that we don't like very much. And today I was talking to some gays in a group thread, and I realized that there's something in the culture that's been happening since the beginning of live performance that I don't think so, honey. And so I'm thrilled to present it to you today.
Okay. Matt Rogers, your mm-hmm. I don't think so, honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Standing ovations. Bitch, sit the fuck down. I cannot see over your fucking head, which is now so high. You need to get in your seat. That's why it's there. What is that good that you need to stand for? I don't think so, honey. Standing up and like clapping, because guess what? Not everyone around you wants to do that, and now you force them to because it's custom. I don't think so, honey. At the Cannes Film Festival, whenever something is half good, it gets a 10-minute standing ovation. That movie Annette with Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard, it was reported that it got over 6-minute standing ovation. Bitch, Pierres need to sit the fuck down, okay? If I wanted to see a bunch of racist clap, I would go to a fucking Toby Keith concert, which is a joke I said in said group chat today, which got 0 likes, which is a bummer because I actually thought it was pretty good. And so I'm repeating it here on the podcast. I don't think so, honey. Standing ovations. I want to sit. My thighs hurt. My calves hurt. And most importantly, my feet hurt. So I don't want to stand on them. I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute.
How'd you feel about that?
I felt great about that. And you know, I love when it's about culture. You know, I love when it's of the culture, you know?
You have a lot of notes when it's not.
I do. You know, I'm a purist. I think it should be something related to film, television, movies, dance. Dance is a big one.
Film, you know? Television, movies, dance. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know what? If someone slays a dance, you can stand ovation for them. But that's really all.
But I think my I don't think so, honey, is not going to be directly related to culture.
You're going to go against your own rules?
Well, you know, I famously did I don't think so, honey, when you fart and a little bit of cum comes out.
Yeah, I remember you did that in front of my parents.
Yeah, and that was one of my most iconic I don't think so, honeys, and it did not pass me through to the next.
Yeah, that was the iconic readers. Some of you who've joined the process of listening to this podcast late might not know that Bowen and I once did an I don't think so, honey competition at Clusterfest in San Francisco that was judged by Alaska Thunderfuck and Jinx Monsoon. And I thought they really flopped in their decision-making when they did not pass through Joel Kim Booster, who said, I don't think so, honey, when you fart and a little bit of cum comes out in front of my father, Richard, my mother, Katrina, and my sister, Chelsea Ryan.
Who, speaking of standing ovations, your dad stood up.
Yeah. Clapped I think they all really liked it.
I'm incredible with parents.
Yeah, they love you. And I'll tell them that you said hello, even though you didn't.
I always say hello to Tina.
Her name is Trina.
I know. I'm kidding. Coach and Tina.
Coach and Trina. Joel thinks I'm from New Jersey more than he thinks I'm from Long Island. I think he.
I say it because I know it pisses you off.
Yeah. Okay. All okay. Right. So on this episode of I Don't Think So, Honey, that has been so kindly saved by Joel Kim, I am honored to sort of flip the phone in his direction and press start for what will be a thrilling, I don't think so, honey, from one of the best, robbed on the Clusterfest competition of I don't think so, honey. And here he is, everyone, it's Joel Kim Booster, and his I don't think so, honey starts now.
I don't think so, honey, long text messages. I do not want to see a wall of text pop up on my phone. That you're little so right. Ding that my phone does, it is for tiny little messages. Where are you? BRB. What are you doing? You want to come over? That is it, honey. If I have to scroll through my phone to read the entirety of the message, I don't think so, honey. Bring Mm-mm. that wall down. Make it an email, okay? Mm-hmm. If you have to put paragraph indentations in your text message, it is too long. I have to scroll. It's too long. If break it up. Break it up into smaller chunks even. It's less aggressive to see a smaller chunk of a text
15
message.
Seconds.
These messages were not meant to be long, okay? I am like the fucking Jericho. Bring the wall down.
I am
Mr. Gorbachev, I do not want to see the wall. That is the quote, and I am leaving it there. Stop sending long text messages. Make it a phone call.
And that's 1 minute. I disagree. Make it a phone call. I almost never want to get on the phone. I don't like talking on the phone. But I will say this. You must love my texting because it's a lot of short things. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'll just like if I were texting right now what I'm saying, it would be truly 8 texts. Like the word like will be its own text for me. So I'm really happy that that's the
case. Love seeing a cluster of white. I love seeing or blue. I love seeing a cluster
of blue. I love seeing a cluster of white, Joel Kim Booster. Fresh off a vacation. Drag him.
I love seeing a cluster of white for a title of that.
Cluster of white.
Has good news ever been communicated in a long text message?
No.
Has something kind, edifying ever been? It's usually someone who's like, I just want to be honest with you.
Whenever I'm sending a something over text, it all has to be one because I don't want to give them the opportunity to interject. So I think that's why you see a long text message happen, because I want all the information to come out before I get sort of derailed, sidetracked, misunderstood by someone interjecting mid text. So I think that's why you sort of may receive like an email from people. Don't defend him. Wow. Is this what happened a couple hours ago?
No.
That was professional? Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm trusting that you figured it out.
Yeah.
Good. You have to meet people where they are. Period.
Great.
Well, listen, I've learned a lot. I feel we did exchange words on the culture. I have to say that this was edifying, educational. You taught people about, what did you teach about before again?
I don't know. I'm not melatonin, bitch. Listen, I feel like you didn't make a catchphrase with me. I feel like you didn't use any of the catchphrases
with
me.
We did so many rules of culture.
I feel like you didn't say, you understand. I feel like you didn't create new vernacular with me.
Stop dragging me. I think that this episode is going to be one of the best. I think people are going to be like, wow, to know what the girls are capable of when tragedy befalls. And let me just say what happened to Bowen. Bowen is off in the Dominican Republic. For reasons I don't think I can disclose, but they're good reasons.
They're
very cool reasons and good reasons. And wouldn't you believe it? The Wi-Fi at his hotel in the DR, not so great. And so he sort of hopped on and we sort of got very Bowen Yang is frustrated energy with the Wi-Fi. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to nip this in the bud right now and call someone that I no, at least was available before because they asked me to hang out. And that was you, Joel Kim. And I'm so happy that I did, because not only did I get to spend time with my sister, but I got to provide the readers with an excellent episode co-hosted by one of our great minds.
Can I tell you a story really quickly that the Dominican Republic just reminded me of? Because our friend Bowen is in the Dominican Republic. And one of my friends, Sandra Bullock, is also in the Dominican Republic right now. And she somehow is now friends with one of our mutual friends who listened to Io Adeboye's podcast, Iconoclast, where she listened to my episode of Iconoclast, where I talk about Sandra Bullock, and texted her a breakdown of what I said in the episode and whether or not it was right or wrong. All the questions I asked about Sandy. And the one negative thing I said about Sandra Bullock, I said the only bad thing Sandra Bullock has ever done is the Minions movie.
Minions.
She should not do voiceover work. And she said in response to that, your friend Joel is absolutely correct. I fall apart in the booth. And I've never done it again.
Fall apart in the booth. See, that is so shocking to me. You think she'd come alive in the booth.
No, she needs another person there. I see it for her. I see it.
You know, I'm going to say this about myself. I come alive in the booth.
I do too. I love the booth.
I love the booth. I think the booth is a great place. I think the booth is a place of great opportunity. So color me shocked to hear that Sandra Bullock doesn't like the booth. But maybe she just loves the camera. just like it loves her.
You know, she loves the camera. I think she loves the tactile nature of acting. She's always touching something. You know, I think that's the problem. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. And what she's touching is our hearts. And you know what? You know what? She has that in common with you. You were able to reach through the screen. Big things coming, Jolie. Big things. Can't wait to
I can't wait for those big things, too. I've got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of big things waiting for me around New York City.
Oh, I hope that's not a euphemism. But I also hope
it's not. It's not. I have a lot of belongings that I have left over the city in various storage units.
Okay, well, I'll suggest some people to help you pick those things up.
Okay, great.
Joel Kim, we end every episode with a song, and I want you to know that last week we sort of iconically ended with Only Hope by Mandy Moore.
I remember.
And so I would sort of like to, and that's the reason we did that is because we mentioned her during the episode. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to sing the classic tune.
But wait, we have to name Cousin of the Week.
Oh, the Cousin of the Week.
Wow.
Is really tight between three people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Cousin of the Week is tight between Danielle Staub for appearing in the Erika Jayne documentary and claiming to know information that we're not sure that she knows, and also resembling a Long Island sort of tri-state area girl that I know. And this is still Lost Culture, so I do get to sort of make the decision. The next nominee is Gugu Mbatha-Raw. Because we don't really know what to do with her, but we know we want her around at all times, and she is a welcome presence.
Not a sister, not a mother.
No.
Something in between.
And the third nominee for Cousin of the Week is, of course, Hailee Steinfeld, because we always love speaking of her. Yeah. She got accolades from her family and beyond for doing a goofy accent wearing a big hat and riding a horse, which, you know, if a cousin does that in a family, it's the most hilarious thing, especially when she's a cute girl.
Voted for Trump.
And we end every episode with a song. Hey, gonna love myself, don't need anybody else. Hailee won. She's the Cousin of the Week. Yeah. Gonna love myself, We do not have confirmation that Hailee Steinfeld voted for Trump. It's a vicious rumor, and that will
that
exist
I
in that it will exist in Hollywood history. Goodbye.
Goodbye.